Welcome to CPA Practice Advisors Tech to Go podcast series, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists. These thought leaders tackle issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
This is Darren Root, executive editor of CPA Practice Advisor, coming to you with episode 64 of Tech to Go. Here today with my regular co-host, Randy Johnston. So welcome today, Randy.
Thank you very much, Darren, and welcome to our listeners from around the country.
Well, Randy, we just got back from, you and I both, a round of conferences, which always takes place late October, early November, into mid-November. Particularly CCH's Thomson Reuters and Sleater Conference. So what I'd like to do today is just talk a little bit about, you know, kind of what we took from those, what each of us learned. You know, we both taught sessions, kind of what we see going on. Does that sound reasonable? And then wrap up today with maybe a discussion of the new iPad Mini, which I know you've been playing with and have, and then also Microsoft's new Surface device. Does that sound fair enough?
It sounds like a great thing. And, you know, one of the lucky parts you and I have in our work is to be invited as guests to these major conferences. And in all the cases, I learned more than one significant thing by being an attendee. And so many of our listeners maybe only get to choose one conference to get to. But, you know, I had the benefit in the last 3 weeks of being at 8 different conferences besides the 3 that we're going to focus on today.
Wow. Well, let's talk. You know, Doug Sleater, the Sleater Conference, was probably the one that kicked off the season, the fall season this year. So Doug's conference, you attended, did quite a role there. Tell us what went on there.
Well, the Sleater Conference, which used to be very QuickBooks-centric, now I'd call it more small business and practice-centric as a conference. He intentionally moved the conference earlier to October 21 through 24 type of time frame. Intuit played a very significant role there with a broad presence, and two or three or four takeaways. First, Intuit's QuickBooks Online, as we've talked in prior calls, is here to stay. The third-party add-ins to drive QuickBooks Online even to a broader presence were also pretty evident at the show. Number two, Intuit isn't abandoning QuickBooks Desktop by any imagination, any stretch of our imagination. In fact, as we talked last time with the new user interface in QuickBooks 2013, huge changes there. But there were other notable accounting software vendors that had a presence, Wave being an example, Monchilla, who launched new with their accounting and payroll systems, and then other players like Zoho, which have kind of complete turnkey systems and so forth. Intuit did use the Sleater Conference as a stage to talk about the revisions in their ProAdvisor program, which we did talk about a little bit in our last podcast, but in retrospect and trying to get a little time on it now, the changes in the ProAdvisor program, the announcements of having QuickBooks Online Accountants Edition included with ProAdvisor memberships, the ability to do Intuit Tax Online for 5 returns and so forth, those are all pretty significant changes that were announced and part of the Sleater Conference.
You know, I know the QuickBooks Online Accountant came out of beta at that conference too, I believe, didn't it? Didn't they announce they were now in live version of that?
That's right. It is absolutely live as we're recording today, and many features inside that product make it helpful and useful, as you know. So for all of our listeners, you just need to make sure that if you are using QuickBooks Online with any of your clients, that you make sure that you've got your Accountant's Edition turned on and hooked in properly. There are a few tricks to get that done, but it's not terribly difficult.
You know, I know you've been very close in discussions with Intuit as have we, and you know, I see QuickBooks Online Accountant evolving quite nicely over the next 6 to 12 months to things that accounting firms can really, I think, latch on to.
Well, the QuickBooks Online Accountants team is listening pretty carefully. Now, it's been top-down driven. You've had interviews probably at higher levels for greater lengths of time than I have on some of these strategic things. But when you consider today that there's approximately 100 U.S.-based programmers working on QuickBooks Online, and at least 9 product managers kind of shepherding this product to its, you know, new ends and new features. That's a lot of talent being thrown at a single product. And many companies don't have that many people in their entire company, let alone just development and product management teams doing that type of work. So the rule of thumb, if you're a user of QuickBooks Online and you submit a feature request, that feature request will be reviewed every week by the QuickBooks Online management team. They've jokingly told me among them, and I know a number of the managers, that they'll say, hey, here's a comment that says, we know you won't read this, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. And, of course, they talk about, you know, who that was, and it's not unusual that they will get on the phone and talk to that person at greater length about the feature. So I want to encourage our listeners to submit features, not only for QuickBooks Online, but any other product that they're using. The programming teams are listening. The product managers are trying to say, this is a good idea. Here's where it fits in the roadmap. You got to ask for these features on things that I'd consider annoyances or costing you or your team's time.
I talked to Eric Pulaski last week, the CEO, founder of Smart Vault. Eric, I know, is ready to release a QuickBooks Online paperless attach feature for the QuickBooks Online product. It's either November 26th or the 28th of this month that it will be available as well. I don't know if you know the exact date, but it's one of those two, I believe.
Yes, Eric has done a good job of using the new development platform, the IPP model. He's enabled a lot of other developers to get to QuickBooks Online via his platform. And, you know, we've talked about Smart Vault with our listeners a number of times. We think it's a really great product. Now, something we didn't have on the agenda for today, Darren, but I think it's important. I know I'm a little over the top when I make these security claims, but I really don't like to have client confidential files in Dropbox, Box.net, SugarSync, or a number of other products like Microsoft SkyDrive or Google's Drive, just to name five. Five places I do like client confidential files include SmartVault, ShareFile, and then the portals from CCH, Thompson, and Accountants World. I think all five of those are secure enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you think about SmartVault having the right security on files, Eric's done a wonderful job of building that product up. So now not only can you have a desktop-attached document management system, but an online accounting system attached. That's pretty brilliant code. And he's also solved that problem of being able to scan and go straight into the Smart Vault product.
He, you know, up until this point, QBO or QuickBooks Online did not have a paperless feature. And so it's, you know, I find that people that want to use a SaaS-based application, it doesn't feel right to go put a paper document in a file cabinet. So I'm pretty excited about him solving that issue and giving the option of allowing Smart Vault to work with QBO and a really cool-looking floating attach feature inside of QBO.
Yeah, it's a well-done feature. And when we continue to talk through these issues with our listeners of do you stay on-premise, do you go hosted, do you do SaaS, really, for me to think SaaS in total, I want to solve the entire problem as software as a service in a browser.
Yep.
And up until this point of release for Smart Vault, there really hadn't been a QuickBooks Online document management that really made a lot of sense to me.
Yep.
So it's another tipping point, I think, for the product, and I think it will accelerate the growth even more.
So after this leader conference, and we, you and I both attended the CCH Users Conference, which was really next. It was held out in San Diego, a great venue. They sold it out. I think they said around 1,400 total attendees, including vendors and speakers. Great crowd. What was your takeaway from that particular event?
Yeah, it was a gorgeous event held at the Hyatt there in San Diego. And you know, the, probably three or four key items from this. The new management team has a pretty clear vision of where they're trying to take the users in the CCH base. Number two, I think there'll be rolled out products over the coming year and frankly into the fall to do very practical things for firms. Number three, it was pretty clear that there was fun in the event with the 100th anniversary of CCH being celebrated on the last day. Questions about next-gen SaaS and some of the web-enabled or tablet-enabled products became pretty clearly talked about. I attended a special breakout session on Tuesday morning the 6th about how the tablets were being deployed for lots of functions and features inside the CCH family. I, during the meeting, actually downloaded some of the ones that I didn't have and didn't know about and tried it. And the user interface and the maturity of the tablet and smartphone programming on all of the major vendors has really taken a step up this year. I think it's better in the Intuit platform, it's better in the CCH platform, it's better in the Sage platform, and as we'll probably talk more about it in a moment, I think it's actually improved in the Thomson platform. So the programmers are seeing the capabilities, they're understanding how to build the products, so they're better. The sessions at CCH in general, users told me that they were very much in depth, that they were getting far more content than they'd actually expected as attendees. And anytime I have an attendee walk up and say, wow, I just came out of this session and it was stellar. I had that told to me by attendees over and over who had no reason to tell it to me other than I just happened to be one of the people that they walked up to after the sessions were done. And the guest speakers that CCH brought in, I think, had a broad number of practice management insights and strategies that the attendees walked away saying, yeah, that does make sense.
You know, takeaways I think I took from it, one was Karen Abramson, who is now, you know, president of North America, I believe. I'm not exactly sure what her title is, but Karen did her keynote. And the one thing I took from her is she's intent on delivering product and delivering good product. And making promises that she can keep and doing a good job at that. Did you take that from her?
Hands down, yes. Of course, I have spent extensive time with her in both August and at the CCH event in San Diego. I was surprised that she spent upwards of an hour with me there because it's like, you know, you've got all these customers that you really should be interfacing with. And
yeah.
She said, well, you know, I need to talk to you and hear what you're saying as well. But she is a product manager by, I'll call it trade and upbringing. And she's had wonderful success over a multi-year, 13, 18-year career inside CCH, getting products delivered as users ask for them. So
yeah.
She is absolutely going to do what she says, I think, from a product delivery perspective.
So I think that's important for their customers, for sure. Second thing that I took from that particular conference, there was a keynote on day one, the gentleman. Do you recall his name?
Thank you, love, for that.
It was Daniel. Can't remember his name offhand, but the point I took from him was this. He was talking about things that are obvious trends and things that are things that we really can't foretell. So as an example, you know, Apple stock, I didn't know it was going to go from $704 down to $500, whatever it went down to, and I don't know what's going to happen to it tomorrow. So those are things that are a little out of our control, and we don't know what's going to happen. But there's some obvious things that we should be seeing. Mobile being obvious, the web, you know, SaaS, collaborative platforms being obvious, and yet a lot of firms aren't paying attention to those trends that are obvious. Did you get that out of that session?
I did, and now it was like mental block there for a minute because who you're talking about is Dan Burris out of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And the good news is I've known Dan since he first started speaking back in the early 80s. So when he was first breaking into the business, we met each other. And his technology trends that he's talking about, 20 trends is what they were in the early days, I've used those as guidance for me since I learned them from him in those in 1983 or 84 time frame. So when he, during his presentation, said, look, I came up with these trends back in the 80s, I'm thinking, yeah, you absolutely did, but your listeners here don't know that. So, but he had the concept of soft trends and hard trends, the hard trends being very predictable. And, of course, a lot of his trend predictions are based on things that we can be pretty sure of. And so the trends, which you can get access to from the CCH website, even as a non-attendee, can be a wonderful resource for you to get a flavor of these 20, now 25 is what he's expanded them to, different technologies that help you predict the future. But his methodology has absolutely worked for me for right at 30 years.
Yeah, I found him to be very a good speaker, and I took a lot from his presentation. The other thing I took out of CCH's event was their dedication to mobile. Mobile's here to stay. Mobile's going to continue to expand. They're focused on getting things on mobile devices. I believe their whole library now is available on mobile. Am I speaking right on that?
You are speaking right on that, and not only will we get all the library and the tax research and all the things that they have on that side, but also some of their core applications, like the experience in CCH document, to be able to run that from a mobile app well, and their intent is to continue going down. Whatever it makes sense to deal with clients face-to-face, or if you're in meetings that you can effectively do on a tablet or a phone, they're going to do their best at delivering what you need in those platforms in that style.
I believe it's important for firms to start taking notice of that and start employing these devices inside their organization smartly. Would be your recommendation as well?
And your core word there is smartly. Give it thought about what it is that you want to be able to do among your partner group, what you need to do facing your clients, what are the things you're trying to accomplish, and go in small steps. Pick some important things and solve that problem, and pick another important thing and solve that. I think some of the publishers are ill-guided, thinking that you're going to manage the firm from a digital dashboard on the device or that you're going to analyze your client base. Yes, you might do that from home when you're sitting around thinking about it, but day-to-day, I think it's much more of an interaction and a convenience of being able to get to maybe all the documents that you prepared and really having the library and maybe a quick way to look things up. But let's face it, most of us are not going to give advice on the fly without going back and really doing some research if that's what's required, unless we do it every day and we just need a little reminder of what the law actually says.
Well, as I think about it in my firm and, you know, an app that I adopted, you know, a while back is Mint.com for me personally. I've adopted, which is, you know, Intuit purchased Mint.com. It's sort of a replacement for me for Quicken, which I use for, you know, 25 years. But, you know, the things I use on my iPad are probably not dissimilar to you, Randy. I use my American Airlines app, my Starwood app, my Marriott app, you know, Delta, Mint.com, all the things that I do to sort of manage my personal life that, you know, Fidelity.com. I don't really want to go open my laptop and check on my account balances in Fidelity as an example. But if I can just really quickly click on an app on my iPad, check on performance today, I'll do that maybe daily. Or transactions that have cleared my checking account, I don't really want to log into my bank account. Maybe I want to see everything that's been clearing all my accounts through Mint. Or maybe I want to be able to see a copy of a tax return, you know, something like that. You know, logging into an accountant's portal, if you will, historically has required us to go to our laptop or our desktop and log in, or have a less than great experience logging in on a mobile device. But I see that trend starting to change, and we'll talk about what Thompson's done here in a minute. But that's how I think about those apps in my firm. How can I roll out the things that I'm doing in my firm to my clients so that it makes sense, that it's convenient for them?
Understood. In fact, as I think about my usages, you were talking about yours. You know, I had the good fortune of teaching a cloud tablet mobile type of session for CCH, and I showed people how I had things organized on my iPhone, iPad, iMini, and so forth. And a lot of my main screen apps are really more personal in nature, whereas my secondary screen apps are collected by business function, whether it's travel, as you were alluding to, or financial, or whether it's true business apps. And the fact of the matter is that I have a couple of groups of business apps, but the rest of them are really groups of personal apps. So when I'm doing business, I go to the business section, and when I'm doing personal, let's just say it's reading or books, you know, I'll be in that section. And as I showed people the organization, saying, look, I'm keeping this real simple. I have two screens worth of apps in my iPhone, iPad, iMini, and they're all organized the same.
Yep.
Here's the reason I'm doing it that way. And I'm very, very consistent between all three of my iPhone, iPad mini, and iPad big.
We, you know, I've never really talked about this, but I organize mine essentially the same way. So it sounds like a very similar way of working. So, you know, maybe it's logical that people are going to organize in that sort of fashion. So good takeaways from CCH is, you know, they're going to be shipping, building great products, and mobile is huge. I think that's what I took from them. Thomson Reuters, we had a nice time at Thomson Reuters. Thomson Reuters' big announcement really was their mobile app, and it's a little different than we traditionally think about a mobile app. They launched the ability for an accounting firm to present on a mobile device information that they produce for their clients. So Thomson has historically had what they call their Net Client app, which is their portals, and now they've launched an app that allows their clients and their clients, maybe their payroll client employees, to have access into that information at the touch of their, at the, you know, at their discretion on their mobile device.
Yeah, and if we think about the evolution here, Thomson was one of the first CPA-oriented groups to have firm-related apps. So, and you think about the extension they did with Practice CS and some of the other places. This app was the first time we took the app and turned it client-facing. Now, you and I both know you could take somebody like SmartVault, which we talked about earlier in this podcast, and present a little bit of the client-facing side. But this is the first time that I think we've seen a publisher say, we're going to make an app specifically for the client. Now, again, we could construe maybe the payroll app and Intuit has a little bit of this. But this is a little bit different, and it's hard to convey in a conversation, I think, for our listeners. But you've got to assume that the CPA firm has control over this client-facing app.
John Behrens, in his keynote at Thomson Reuters, seemed to be focused on the idea that they're going to continue down this mobile path as well. So, you know, we're hearing a consistent theme from them as well as CCH.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in their particular case, I think the virtual office growth has continued to be good for them. I think they actually do have pure SaaS applications on the high end with GoFileRoom and GoSystemRS Tax. So they've been doing their WorkPaper CS products. So, you know, they have some SaaS-y products, and they have some mobile products. So, you know, as a team, I think I see where they're going for the long haul. But, you know, I would reflect back on all three events now saying, you know, cloud, mobile, hybrid is here to stay. That's pretty clear. And that the interactive client accounting looks like it's pretty much here to stay.
Yeah, I would agree with you on both fronts. So kind of brings us to our last couple of topics. I had the opportunity to play with the new Windows Surface device recently. I know you've been on that for quite some time. Certainly a big difference in the way I would normally think. So this is not a no-brainer for people to automatically say, wow, I want to convert to this. I'm not saying it's not cool. I'm just saying it's not a no-brainer. What's your take on the Surface device?
This is much more of a strategy decision. So probably a year plus ago, Darren, you might recall we had a podcast about platform, and I actually wrote an article for the publication about you got to think about your platform for Apple or whether you're Android or whether you're Windows. And this is really the delivery of this new platform strategy for Microsoft. Now, I do maintain, and I think Isaac linked this together for CPA Practice Advisor, I wrote a pretty complete review of the Microsoft Surface and a number of the other tablets that I'd purchased and used this year. And I listed the dollars that I spent personally, because my strategy is I make everything from email to portal to virtual desktop through Citrix to virtual desktop through VMware. I make that run across every platform that we have. Now, I like the Surface, but for our listeners, you should not consider buying the Microsoft Surface at all until the Pro version arrives in January, and the reason for that is the integration of the securities and the more sophisticated Microsoft Office offerings. Now, the Surface shipped with Office 2013, and Office 2013 was posted in the libraries from Microsoft on October 25th, so the product is out. We'll see the retail versions in January 2013, but today I'm running production Windows 8 and production Office 2013 full-time. Well, that Surface has this beautifully elegant integration between Office apps that run on my Windows 8 desktop and Office apps that run on my Surface. And I have played enough with one of my employees' Windows 8 phones to see how it flows all the way out to the phone. So Windows 8 phones basically started shipping in volume the Saturday before we're recording this particular presentation or this podcast. And they are in terribly short supply. So I don't know if that means very few Windows phones were made or if there's just a whole lot of them that have been purchased. But the way you interact with the Surface is so much different because of the touch screen and so forth. Now, the standard keyboard that ships with these products is sufficient, better than most of the professional keyboards that I've added, for example, the Zag keyboard on the iPad. But the premium keyboard on the Surface is probably worth the extra $10 to get that version of the keyboard. But overall, very fast little product, a dearth of apps. There's just not near enough apps. But oddly enough, all the business apps that I'm using, I was able to get to run on the Surface, and some of the new apps, Skype being a great example, is way better on the Surface than the experience on a desktop even today.
Do you see that the Surface was Microsoft's, and I don't want to say answer, but I'll say that, answer to the iPad? Because the devices are very similar. The keyboard snaps on like the iPad cover snaps on. I mean, Is that where you see that positioned?
Yeah, I think it really is. You know, we need to compete with a tablet, and we want to maintain our Windows ecosystems. You know, every time I've demonstrated this Surface to this point, I've actually dropped down to a command prompt and done a DOS DIR, so you can see the directory structure. And, you know, this Surface has a directory structure in it, and you can plug in USB drives, and you can plug in micro SD, so you can expand the amount of storage on the device pretty radically. I hesitate to say unlimited, but boy, you can put a lot on the devices. You know, there's already been a lawsuit filed by a law firm on the Microsoft Surface because, unlike the iPad, where they keep the operating system and the apps in a separate area, and you get all the storage that you buy. In the Surface, they take some of the 64 gig, let's say, and use it for the Windows RT operating system. So you only net a much smaller portion of the 64 gig than you do on the whole device. But the product acts like a little light-duty computer.
Yeah.
And I don't know that those of us who are using tablets expect our tablet to act like a computer. And if you expect that, and you kind of do that type of a mental decision, the Surface has shades of brilliance.
Yeah.
On the other side, if you're expecting to use it as a, let's pick it up and quickly, you know, look at our fidelity balances, as you mentioned earlier in the conversation, it's not quite as good for that type of functionality as the iPad is.
I think probably, and you and I talked about this before we went live today, the one big takeaway I think we would both have is that there's going to be training involved here if we're going to roll this out in any way in our firms. You agree with that still?
You know, a bigger picture on this, Windows 8, you should not put in front of people without training. The Windows Surface, the Microsoft Surface, is Windows 8. And
yeah.
It is so dead ringer for Windows 8. A lot of the charms, extensions, and the way you get to everything, it's very, very Windows 8. So, you know, if you're going to put Windows 8 and or Surface in front of people, you're going to have a training program to talk about the strategies, how the devices work. And that's why, number one, I think we're not going to get to that before this tax season. Number two, you're going to have new computer hardware to really support Windows 8 correctly. But number three, you may want to step back and have a strategic planning session around, all right, am I really going to use the Surface, or am I going to use new computers that have touch screens and I don't need a tablet at all, which is where products like the Lenovo Yoga or the Lenovo Twist or the Dell XPS Duo, which are all shipping products today, could be an answer for you. And instead of having an $800 tablet computer, or you know, $1,000 or a $600 tablet computer, maybe you revert back to just a simpler computer. But now we've got the same problem, Darren, you alluded to earlier. Do I really want to pull out a computer to do a quick, you know, view? No, maybe I want to do it on something smaller like the iPad Mini.
Yeah. That, which brings up the Mini. You know, I had the opportunity, the first one I've seen was the one you had at CCH. I would say that my impression was, you know, I've had an iPad, every iPad since the beginning, and so I'm on my third one now, iPad 3, which I like quite well. I was underwhelmed by your iPad Mini, but I don't know what my expectation was. It was just a smaller version in my mind of my iPad 3.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, having used the iPad Mini more, I was disappointed in the width, making it hard to hold. Now, a lot of people that I handed it to held it in one hand, kind of with their thumb and forefinger and maybe a secondary finger, and so that wound up being good enough for them. The speed is actually acceptable enough, and the screen is acceptable enough. The Lightning to VGA connectors finally shipped, and frankly, the new Lightning connector holds in the iPad Mini better for VGA projection. So for those of us who have had the 40-pin connector fall out of an iPad during a presentation, which is pretty much everybody who's ever tried to do that, this is actually nicer on that front. The iPad Mini, the display is big enough to do the things that we need to do, and it's smaller and lighter. So many of our listeners know Dr. Bob Spencer as well. Bob and I talked about that just yesterday and concluded that for most of our iPad presentations for the rest of the year, we're going to ditch the large iPad and just use the Mini because it's enough. Now, two other big objections to the iPad Mini right now. There is no real clean keyboard solution for the iPad Mini. And number two, there's no real great cover solution. So I'm not a fan of the Apple refrigerator doors, as I call them, the covers that come off. That's what Apple's trying to sell for the iPad Mini. So unfortunately, my iPad Mini today still lives in a bag, waiting for vendors to get us better solutions for the iPad Mini from a keyboard and a cover perspective.
My favorite cover of all, and I don't think it's available for the Mini yet either, is the Tumi, T-U-M-I, the Tumi cover for my iPad 3. It has sort of a hard back cover, it just snaps in and has a beautiful front cover thin. Really have enjoyed that. I suspect there will be one out for the Mini in the near future, knowing the way Tumi does things.
Yeah, I would bet they will have one as well. And of course, for me, I've used the Zag products for keyboards, and I've used both the Professional and the Pro Plus. And each one of those two different keyboards have different features. The Professional has kind of an all-in-one carbon fiber protector for the iPad, a stronger keyboard, really responsive keyboard. And then the Pro Plus is the backlit version of a magnetic snap-on cover. So it's the smallest, lightest, best keyboard I've found for the iPad at this point. And the backlight is surprisingly useful, 8 different colors, 3 different densities. And so if you're looking for a really fine keyboard, but unfortunately with the iPad mini's size, if you create a keyboard that attaches to the device, the keyboard will be too small. So I'm just fascinated to see how the vendors will respond in creating keyboards.
Well, Randy, we're out of time today. I think good session, a lot of good information. We're barreling down on the Thanksgiving holiday. By the time people listen to this, we'll be on, we're past Thanksgiving, we'll be looking towards Christmas. So hopefully you have a great Thanksgiving. You and I will be together at actually our RootWorks Academy conference in Sarasota, Florida, first part of December. So we're looking forward to that and looking forward to having you at that event. So I want to thank our listeners for listening today.
Pleased to spend the time this way and look forward to seeing you at Sarasota and in other events. And we'd ask our listeners to try to see where we're going to be face to face. And I can't tell you how pleased I am when one of you walks up and says, "I listen to your podcast," because it's so nice to put a face and a listener together. So do let us know that you're listening in and that there's valuable information that you're gaining from us.
Absolutely. Well, Randy, have a good Thanksgiving.
Thanks, same to you, and the best to all of our listeners, too.
For more info on the CPA Practice Advisor programs and our e-newsletter, visit cpapracticeadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 1-800-456-0864, extension 2107, or tune into future episodes where you'll be able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.